This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
I'd like to welcome everyone to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with Eric Dahl.
Hey, hey, hey. Good afternoon.
We're recording, yes, afternoon, just after the close today, February 3rd. We're those of you that are listening live, you know that we're live on the Twitter Spaces again today. And apparently the feedback was good from last week, so we're going to give it another shot today. Those of you listening to the podcast version, we do, or at least the last two times we have tried to do this live, so you know, we shoot for 105, but 110 seems to be our start time here. For this week, though, we had a pretty volatile week, Eric. So why don't we get into where are we for this week? And we'll kind of, I'll just kind of cover the week and January, since we are the beginning of February here. So pretty good January for risk assets. On the week, the S&P was up 101.5%, while in January was up a whopping 6.3%. Leading the way in January, communication services and consumer discretionary up. Communication services up just under 15%. Consumer discretionary just up just over 15%. And on the week, similarly, communication services up 5.5%. Discretionary, only put in up 2% week. So kind of lagged, but was still the big winner for January. Looking at the sectors for the month of January, utilities was the worst performer, down 2%. Healthcare down slightly under 2%, and then consumer staples down slightly over 1%. Looking at the week, again, similar story here, except that energy was the worst performer, down 5.75% on the week. If we go to growth and value, growth had a good January, up over 8%, value up over 5%. And then on the week, ending February 3rd, growth was up just under 3% and value up 86 basis points. If we move over to the bond market, we had a lot of volatility this week, a lot of volatility today. But if we go back and look at the week, we saw the two-year up 11 basis points to 431, to end the week at 431. 10-year just up only 3 basis points to 353. And the long bond up a bit to 3.62%. For January, though, we had a pretty big flattening with the two-year down 19 basis points, first time in a few months we've been down in terms of yield, and the 10-year down 34 basis points and the long bond down 31. So from going from there, you can see that because of that flattening, the twos, tens down another 15 basis points to close January at negative 70 basis points. On the week, twos, tens down another, looks like 8 basis points to close at negative 78. And similarly with the 3-month 10-year, close January at negative 1.12%. down, flattened another 60 basis points, ended the week at a negative 1.13%. So given that that move in interest rates, no surprise there that the Bloomberg Aggregate Index ended January up 3%. So a good month here, good way to start the year. Looking across the different sectors of the market, given that rate move, no surprise that investment grade corporate bonds was the best performer at up 4%. Looks like high yield corporates, just the slight laggard there, up 3.8. And then almost surprisingly to me, given the duration or the yield move, agency mortgages was the second best performer out of the aggregate sectors, looks like just over 3%, 3.25%. And treasuries, the laggard, up only 2.5%. On the week, it looks like ag was flat, investment grade corporates were up, and then agency MBS and treasuries were flat. So a pretty interesting week. Bank loans up 50 basis points, and high yield, the big winner, up almost 0.75 points. If we move over to the to commodity land, if we look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index, the one broad index that was down on the month of January, down 50 basis points, actually had a pretty terrible week, down 4%. Energy leading the way down, energy commodities down 17% on the year, or oh no, I'm sorry, that's a year to date, down almost just under 10% in January, up down or down 10% on the week. So pretty terrible their start to 2023 for the commodity index. Looking at oil, oil is down 8% on a price basis. If you remember last week, Sam was talking about how it would close just below $80 a barrel on WTI crude, and it closed today at just over $73 a barrel. Gold can't get it out of its way, given that the yield moves here closed the week at 1864, down from over 1930 last week, so down 3.5%. If we kind of go down to Bitcoin is the one asset that is up in all time periods, was up January 37%, up another 1% this week. So started the year to date up 40, almost 41%. So with that, Erica, that was a quick rundown of markets. Why don't we get into the macro things that move the markets so much this past week?
Yeah, absolutely. And with that Bitcoin price move, you can just kind of get that. That's the barometer of animal spirits, and the animal spirits are alive and well in the marketplace. So jumping right into the macro for the week, this was a pretty rich week in terms of macroeconomic indicators that came out. On Tuesday, the 31st of January, we had the employment cost index come out, and the print was 1.0%, which was 10 basis points lower than the estimate. Definitely showing positive momentum there, which is weighing on the mind of Mr. Powell, because that's the labor market is one of the most difficult conundrums for the Fed to understand right now. And we'll jump into that when we talk about the topic of the week. Up next on Tuesday, we had the 31st as well. We had the S&P CoreLogic 20 City Real Estate Index come out, and that was down. The momentum was down in November. We had it down minus 0.54% for the month. And once again, that just shows the kind of weakness in housing, which is very interest rate sensitive. The all 20 cities reported a decline month over month. And I thought that was kind of an interesting fact, that this is a broad decline in housing. It's not just one market. It's not just Las Vegas or Miami. This is a broad spectrum of the American housing market going down. So that's something to keep an eye on, but it's kind of as expected with the rate situation and the bullish run up in housing we had in 2022.
And this was the last data point is end of November. So you didn't get, and it kind of averages those 3 months, right? So I would say rates were up significantly for those 3 months ending November. So it'll be interesting to see going forward if that pace of decline slows down, just given the rate moves we've seen since then.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, mortgage rates have kind of stabilized. So perhaps some buyers are going to be, thinking now's my chance to get in. Maybe some sellers are going to forget about the dreams of the June 2022 prices and bring their offers down. We'll see how it shakes out for December in about a month's time. The next big data point we had was the ISM manufacturing for January, and that came out at 47.4, which was 0.6 below the estimate. And I just think that was a pretty negative number. That was a miss. And it kind of shows that maybe manufacturing is in a tough spot in this country. Manufacturing and housing are two of the more capital intensive, interest rate sensitive areas of the economy. So it kind of makes sense that those are the ones that are getting squeezed by the Federal Reserve's tight monetary policy. Moving on, we had the JOLTS data come out on Wednesday, February 1st, and that was a huge upside surprise. It came in at 11,700,000 over expectations. And it was interesting. In Powell's press conference, he kind of dissed that and saying it was volatile. It's going to be interesting to watch because with that number, we're back to 1.9 jobs per opening, 1.9 jobs per person looking for a job. So that's like one of those things that just shows a very strong labor market in this country right now. Also on Wednesday, we had
Eric, I was going to say right before you get to that, I thought it was interesting. That must be the Fed chairman speak for this data point did not move in the direction that I want it to. For those of us who've been around a while, I remember Janet Yellen saying that GDP was a volatile indicator when it didn't go what she was expecting. So I think we can take volatile indicator, meaning it didn't move the way we wanted it to move. So dismiss it, this one data point.
Yeah, that's good. That's like the Cracker Jack's box decoder ring for the Federal Reserve. When the FOMC chairperson comes out and says it's a volatile indicator, they were just very disappointed in the information that indicator gave. So the FOMC rate decision, that was the big market mover for the week. Up to that point, the Fed raised by 25 basis points, but more importantly, in the press conference, which we'll get into, Powell, the market interpreted Powell's tone as quite dovish, and the market really took off. It ripped, and it took off on Thursday again. So that they raised interest rates 25 basis points to 4.75%. If you kind of look back at the SEP, the last SEP, the terminal rate that the Fed is putting out is between 5 and 5.25. So they're very close to the end, at least from that point of view. Maybe the market's expecting one more hike, maybe two. Moving on Thursday, we had initial jobless claims come out at 183,000, 12,000 less than expectations. And that puts the continuing claims at 1.6 million, which was again below expectations. So positive prints from the labor market. The big kind of market mover that hit today, Friday, was the home run payroll report. The change in non-farm payrolls was positive 517,000, up 500,000 versus the estimate of 188,000. So that was a huge hit, and you saw a massive repricing in the markets. The bond market really sold off at the front and belly and back of the curve. You saw the stock market take a dive, and I think that was maybe the kind of wake-up call that this labor market is incredibly strong and the Fed may have to stay the course, because one of the things we're going to talk about is the Fed is now kind of shifting to looking at what they call super core inflation, which is kind of, you know, core isn't where they want to be. So now they're focusing on super core inflation, which is core inflation ex housing services, because as we talked about, the housing market's declining, but the core services ex housing is still strong. And that's very correlated to the labor market and average hourly earnings. So that's an area of deep concern of the Fed if they want to really get the handle on inflation. So that was a big, big home run for the labor market, but definitely controversial for the financial markets, because it's indicative of the Fed perhaps staying tighter for longer. With those numbers, that leaves the unemployment rate at 3.4%. It hasn't been at that level since the summer of 69. So, I mean, this is an incredibly strong labor market. And I think investors were kind of taken aback by the strength of that report.
It was interesting that, as we'll talk about this so-called super core index. It just reminds me of discussions we used to have where, you know, if you look at a portfolio and you take out all the stocks that were down, you'd be up. Or, you know, take out all the components of inflation that are up so much and that you can't control. And guess what? You have no inflation. So, They'll just take it all out until they get the answer that they want.
That's right. That's right. Massaging and slicing and dicing. So that leaves the labor force participation rate actually increased to 62.4%. And that was above expectations. And we'll round out the week with the ISM Services Index came in at 55.2, which was 4.7 over the estimate, which was another strong print, which, you know, added into the catalyst for the sell-off you saw in financial markets.
Yeah, and those of you remember that ISM services number actually was at 49.2 last month. And that was a big surprise because that was the services had been so strong throughout the year. And that was the bulls were still looking at that number as indicative of a strong economy. And then so people were getting worried with that December number at 49.2, but we're right back up 55.2. Right back up to where we were in November. That service, this is something that, at least on our desk, we were looking at that ISM services number after the payroll number on Pizza Friday to see how that was going to work itself out.
Yeah, and that brings us to the topic of the week, which was the FOMC rate decision and the presser afterwards.
Yeah, so it was, as you said, Eric, the Fed did raise 25 basis points. The statement seemed when the statement came out, it didn't really move markets too much. They said that they anticipate ongoing increases. They want monetary policy to be restrictive. They want to get inflation to 2%. All the same statements that they've had in the past. And they said that the labor market continues to be out of balance. And the labor force participation rate has been a little changed, even though, as you said, Eric, it just ticked up this morning, and that, the monetary policy works with a lag and that they will continue, or they stepped down, because they went to 25 basis points, that's a step down from last year's rapid pace of increases. And they think that a slower pace of increases from here will allow the committee to better assess the economy's progress towards their goals and determine the extent of future increases. So that to me seems like, okay, we're restrictive. We don't know how restrictive we need to get inflation to 2%. We're going to be data dependent without really saying data dependent. And I think that the markets reacted, accordingly. It was pretty much what was expected from the Fed or from the Fed statement. And then the Q&A started, and it was an interesting ride. As usually as we as we see Jay walking to the podium in our chat, we'll kind of put in, I always like to use the Dow as the barometer because it gives you nice big numbers. But the Dow was down like 350 points when he walked up to the podium. And so you can kind of gauge market sentiment from that point on. And, I think I was reading through the transcript again this morning, and it seemed like it was pretty hawkish by reading it. But I think that the experience of listening to Jay Powell and how he answered questions and just kind of the way the press conference went, it did seem a little bit more dovish in real time versus what he actually said. So I think that's kind of another point to, like, you should, or if you can, listen to these things live, just because how he says it, his tone of voice, kind of how he stumbles over words and stumbles over answers to some questions, and kind of how relaxed he felt. It was kind of a better indicator than of actual the words that he was saying.
Yeah, I think that his tone was, I wouldn't say jubilant, but I think there was a sense of like positivity in his message. Somebody asked him how he was doing, and he said, "I'm great." You remember that? It was he definitely was pointing out that he was happy that the inflation situation seems to have turned for the better, going declining. And the labor market has maintained strength. And he liked that. He said he's happy with that. The question is, will that maintain? And will that be the case in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months?
Yeah, I think he actually said he's fine. He said, "Fine, thank you, I'm fine." So I guess for a Fed chairperson, that corresponds to a normal person's, "I feel great." he probably felt great after he was done.
Yeah, he had a very positive sound to the way he responded.
That's right. If we kind of go through the big talking points here, people, there was a couple questions about financial conditions. And he, you know, he said that they won't, they're not focused on the short-term moves and financial conditions. And a lot of those short-term, a lot of those financial condition index are based upon stock, the stock market. So they're not focused on the day-to-day movements of the stock markets, just big, what he said, quote, sustained changes to broader financial conditions. They also said that it's their judgment that they're not at sufficiently restrictive policy, which is why they think that the ongoing hikes will be appropriate. And then I think, one of the other topics that that he talked about a lot was this, disinflation, kind of future inflation. One of the things that people really jumped on is that Powell said, quote, "I would also say that the disinflationary process that you now see underway is really at an early stage. You see inflation now coming down because supply chains have been fixed, demand is shifting back to services, and shortages have been abated," and that's end quote. And so I think people really felt like that was a positive sign. We're not in, obviously we're not in deflation, which would be terrible, but we're in that disinflationary process. They're in the early stages, so they can see us getting back towards that 2% inflation target. And another time he did say, and so there was a lot of these questions. He said, "I think, quote, we can now say, I think for the first time that the disinflationary process has started. We can see that. And we see it really in goods prices so far. Goods prices is a big sector." And then one of the things he talked about was that, that super core. He said, "The issue is that we have a large sector called non-housing services." Then he corrected himself to say core non-housing services, where we don't see inflation yet, or this inflation yet, but I would say what we see is progress without any weakening in labor market conditions. And that's this so-called super core represents 56% of the core inflation index. And if you look at it if you take a 6-month annualized basis, 12-month basis, it's running at 4%. So they want that to come down to closer to that 2% number, because it is such a huge piece of that core PCE number that is the Fed's preferred inflation gauge.
Yeah, I think that was really one of the critical points that can help explain the market action this week, is his real emphasis of super core and then the strong labor market report today. So you saw the animal spirits. We were like, yes, we're on the path to recovery. Rates are going to come down. Then the strong labor market hits on Friday today, and it really took the wind out of the sails of the market.
Yeah. And, this is something that kind of stuck out to me as more of the medium term outlook for the Fed and what they're thinking. And Powell did say that, they're worried about, thinking that they're done, mission accomplished banner. They're done. And then finding out in, he said, 6 or 12 months, that they were actually close to getting, to this 2% inflation, but they didn't get the job done, and that inflation springs back and they have to go back in. And, I think in that case, they're worried about if you get another bout of inflation, people got it complacent, you get another bout of inflation, then inflation becomes, quote unquote, unanchored. And that's really what they're worried about, is people start to think that inflation is here, kind of here to stay. And so that's why I think that their thought process is, we're going to hit it hard, and that we can always cut rates if inflation comes down. And so that was another, I can't remember exactly what he said. Oh, I have it written down. So what they can do is they can cut rates. They know how to deal with, too low of inflation. They can cut rates. And so they're really worried about, inflation rearing its ugly head again, and then being offsides, or them being caught off guard. Another thing is that someone asked him, "Is it what do you guys feel about pausing rate hikes? Is it okay to hike rates here? They hiked 25 on Wednesday. Is it okay to pause and then hike again later?" And one of the things Powell said was, they used to do where they would hike every other meeting, and it was 25 basis points every other meeting, or I think it ended up being 25 basis points 4 times a year, which isn't every other meeting because they only have 6 meetings a year. But that was, that's what they used to do, or that's what they did the last tightening cycle. And so, that option is out there. They don't feel like they have to hit it consecutively. They can pause and then raise rates in the future. So I think that that's something that, again, it's going to be very data dependent. It's really going to depend on what the data comes out. And He did say that they get, but you know, their March meeting is the I think it's March 22nd is the press conference. And so they have, he said they'll have two more employment reports, one of which was today, two more CPI reports. The next one is on, I'll front run your things to keep an eye on, Eric. The next CPI report is on Valentine's Day.
Oh, we'll and, see where that one lands.
Yeah, it could be some Valentine's Day pain. Pain in, during the market, and then hopefully no pain after market close. Soon after the March meeting, they get another ECI report, which they just got here. And so, you know, they have a lot of more data before they have to decide on what to do. And so, you know, I think that, you know, if you take those five data points or those four big data points that they get before their meeting, we got one of them out of the way, very strong for the labor market, three more. And so it'll be interesting to see how the markets react to those data points coming out.
Definitely.
And so, you know, I think it's it'll be interesting. Again, also in March, we get the dots, we get updated dots. And so there's a lot of questions about what's changed in this, you know, 6 weeks from, since your last meeting, according to the dots. And, you know, Powell always said, well, I don't, you know, it's, you know, his, he always talks about what he thinks and not, he doesn't want to be speaking for the committee because the committee speaks, you know, from the dots. And so I think that this will be an interesting time, an interesting place to see what, you know, it's always interesting to see what the dots tell us, but this will be an especially interesting time to see what the dots tell us. And then finally, the last question of the day was actually had someone who
Punchbowl News
came out and asked about quantitative tightening, and you know, they kind of brought it into this debt ceiling, and Powell really doesn't he just says that, you know, he thinks Congress will get, you know, you know, the debt ceiling won't be an issue. It's not up to them. You know, it's not up to the Fed, the monetary side, to do anything about the debt ceiling. It's all up to them. But, you know, it kind of brought it into quantitative tightening on the last question. And he didn't really answer the balance sheet or quantitative tightening part of the question, just said, you know, the Treasury general account will shrink and it'll grow and there'll be lots of flows and the overnight repo and reserves. And we're watching it carefully and we're monitoring it. And then he said, thank you. And then he left the podium. It was like, I think that they so much don't want to be talking about the quantitative tightening, the balance sheet, that you know, they want it running in the background, they want it running on autopilot. It was, maybe they knew that he was going to ask, you know, bring quantitative tightening in into the question, and so they were thinking that's a good last question to end on, so people can't, you know, piggyback off of that.
Yeah, That's a good point.
Because, you know, I guess, you know, they get a feel for what kind of questions people have, but I think it was an interesting press conference, and you know, people there was some speculation that Powell was still suffering from, I guess in the middle of January it was announced that he had COVID, so you know 2 weeks later to be out there in a press conference seems like it would be pretty tiring. So hopefully he was able to relax and feel great after that press conference.
Yeah, definitely. I think that brings us to the week ahead. One comment I have regarding the quantitative tightening, it did have the feeling that the Fed is kind of trying to tiptoe out of the room with quantitative tightening. They leave that to kind of market wonks like our listeners, like us on the desk at Double Line, who are analyzing this stuff. But it is affecting the longer end of the Treasury curve and the mortgage-backed security market. But nonetheless, it's not kind of what you're reading front page news about.
Yeah, front page news is all about the debt ceiling these days. So
yeah. So next week is a very light week regarding economic data. I think one thing that's not an economic data that's interesting is that Mr. Powell we'll have an interview with Bloomberg News on Tuesday, and I think that could be interesting because it kind of gives him a chance to maybe quell the animal spirits a bit or walk things back if he wants to. So I think all eyes are going to be on Mr. Powell's words during that interview.
Yeah, you think that he had to rewrite everything that he was going to say based on the market moves today? The 10 years down the point.
I could see him with, you know, red anger in his face on Thursday, and then, you know, the numbers come out today and it puts him in a tough spot, right? Because the market got euphoric, then the labor market's so strong it really makes it ambiguous as to if he's going to be able to control super core inflation. So it's a pretty interesting spot to be. And he probably had to rip up his speech to answer your question.
I mean, hopefully he didn't rip it up, because, you know, who knows what Monday holds. Maybe Monday reverses Friday, and he's got to get up back out there and hammer things again. But it'll be interesting to see. Certainly, yeah, on Tuesday, all eyes on that, on Jay's TV appearance.
Yeah, and so the big thing for next week economically is Thursday. We have the initial jobless claims and continuing claims. The initial jobless claims are expected to be 195K. And then on Friday, the 10th, we have the University of Michigan sentiment survey come out, the February preliminary number. The estimate is 65.0, which is 0.1 over the prior. So I think that those are really the big data points. You also have the University of Michigan one-year inflation and University of Michigan 5 to 10 year inflation survey come out. The prior for the 1 year was 3.9%, and the 5 to 10 year expectation was 2.9%. So that's the kind of inflation anchoring problem that the Fed is trying to keep inflation expectations anchored. So very light week of data. We have some wonky stuff on Friday. The CPI revisions come out, which could be interesting if you really want to slice and dice there, but I don't think that's going to be a huge market mover. And then, like you said, Mr. Mayberry, the Valentine's Day CPI report, February the 14th.
Yeah, I think, our depending on how wonky this CPI revisions is, or how meaningful it is, maybe that'll be our topic next week. I did see Jason just sent over that someone asked if Powell got the early look on the Pizza Friday numbers. And I can't remember what data point we were talking about over maybe 3 or 4 episodes ago, but it didn't seem like the Fed really gets that, gets the early look on the data. So maybe they have a hint of what it is. Maybe they had a hint that number was going to be a pretty big number, but it doesn't seem like the Fed has any more information than the rest of us, just based on past experience. So I guess you're right, Eric, that does wrap it up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in on the Twitter spaces, and everyone listening via the podcast.
Yeah, thanks to all our listeners out there, especially all of you who tuned in live. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can pick up the latest episode of Monday Morning Minutes before the bell. We're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And if you have any questions, shoot us a note on Twitter, or you can email us at minutes@doubleline.com.
Yeah, and don't forget to check out our website, doubleline.com. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. You can watch Jeffrey Gundlach on TV. He was on TV following the Fed meeting. So it's always interesting to get his outlook and what he thought about Jay Powell's performance. And then also there's another updated episode of Channel 11 where portfolio manager Ken Shinoda talks with Gerard Manak about his outlook and their outlook for 2023. Also, don't forget the other podcast in our podcast family, Sherman Show Pod. You can make sure to follow Sam, who maybe he'll be with us next week, or maybe it'll be the week after. But make sure to follow Sam and Jeff on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great week.
Represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the expressed written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk.
Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.